He had to stop being so suspicious. Kara had told him, Freya had told him, even Edwin, who occasionally gave Nixon a run for his money in the paranoia stakes, had advised him to chill out.
We're not in the bad old days anymore, Merlin. We don't have to look over our shoulder all the time. Christ, in 1 month's time, we'll hopefully be freer from surveillance than we've ever been. So can you stop acting like the Stasi's about to break down your door in the middle of the night?
Merlin can't help it. He'd been on red alert for so long. Even though he knows the direction of the wind is finally changing, it feels fragile to him. Years of watching its back can't be forgotten that quickly. And yet, it would be nice to slow down a bit, not to feel so hunted all the time. Things were moving forward, he has to keep telling himself that. And next month would be a huge step in the right direction, if the bill passed. Maybe he could afford to ease up on the wariness. He hears all this in his mind when he whirls round to confront Hot But Creepy, and the guy stammers out his request for a date. It isn't the first time he's seen the guy around. Merlin initially noted him down as Hot the first time he saw him in the cafe, but it had changed to Hot But Creepy yesterday when he sat next to him and the guy did nothing but stare the entire time. He probably thought he was being subtle, but Merlin's instincts are honed to precision after all this time, and he knows when someone's keeping an eye on him. Still, he isn't particularly worried about it until he notices the man tracking him from the bus stop. He's on such high alert, body already pulsing with adrenaline, ready to fight or flee, that a man's request only sets him off further. Merlin's mind races with all the possibilities. He's a journalist who wants to do an exposé on me. He's a government spy looking for information. He's a magicator who wants to get me alone and stab me to death. He's about to spit out a firm refusal, then a sudden image of Freya flits into his mind, and the sympathetic look she gave him last time they spoke.
"Oh, Merlin, I know you've got the weight of the world on your shoulders, but try to have a little fun sometimes."
One of the best-looking men he's ever seen close up is standing in front of him, blushingly trying to hit on him, and Merlin's got him pegged for some mastermind saboteur. Maybe he should take everyone's advice and just relax a little. He mumbled something out, trying to retract the harshness of his opening statement. Hot But Creepy, who should possibly just revert to his original name of Hot, now in the interest of giving him a chance, asks again, and Merlin takes a minute to look him up and down. What harm could one little date do? If he's a journo or a spy, all Merlin has to do is not talk about anything magic-related. And if he's a crazy man with a knife, Merlin's more than equipped to blast him into the back of beyond. "Sure, why not?" he says, and can't help but be flattered by how pleased the guy looks. They exchange introductions, and he, Arthur, makes the customary comment on Merlin's name. He seems to be getting less shy by the second, which is probably a good thing. Merlin likes a bit of confidence. In fact, Arthur is downright cocky when he confirms the details of the date, and Merlin hates to admit it turns him on a little. He's always had a thing for slightly arrogant guys, mainly because he likes putting them in their place. When Arthur hands over his phone number, their fingers brush and it sends the tiniest tingle down Merlin's arm. This is a good idea. He deserves to cut loose for once in his life. He finds himself curiously excited the next day as he goes about his work. Edwin comments on how cheerful he looks, and Merlin just smiles. Later, when they practice healing spells in the rec room, Merlin finds he's doing much better than he normally does. He knits together the gash on the practice dummy's arm in no time, and barely even leaves a scar. Edwin lets out a low whistle when he examines it. "Really nice work, Merlin. That was a deep cut, too. Weren't you only telling me last week that healing was your weakest area?" "It is," Merlin says, grinning broadly. "Today it just feels a bit easier." Edwin studies him for a second, then nods, pleased. "It's because you're in a good mood. I know you think it's a load of hokum, but there's a reason I'm always telling you about the importance of bodily balance when it comes to magic. We all perform better when we're happier, when we're not stressed, when we're eating well and taking care of ourselves." He claps his hand on Merlin's shoulder. "You're always so tense, so worried about what's going to happen. It's nice to see you looking a bit more relaxed. You'll find your magic flows a lot better when you center yourself." Merlin rolls his eyes good-naturedly. Yeah, all right, shut up, Edwin, I get it, Edwin says. You think you're ready to try a broken bone?
Merlin nods. Today he feels ready for anything. He leaves work early for once, much to the exaggerated shock of Freya on the reception desk, who claims she hasn't seen Merlin leave the building before 6 since someone pulled the fire alarm in December. Merlin just gives her a kiss on the cheek and promises to call her over the weekend.
Yeah, and you can tell me all about who's making you smile like that, she shouts after him, happily. Don't think I'm not onto you, Emrys.
He grins all the way home, and when he gets back, he heads straight to the shower. He's meeting Arthur at 7:30 at a Vietnamese place in Shoreditch. He'd never been, but he'd Googled it, and it didn't seem too fancy or pretentious. He can tell from Arthur's accent that he's quite posh, and he was scared he'd find himself at some Michelin-star restaurant, where the waitress would give him 3 separate forks and sneer at his tattoos. He just wants a nice, chilled-out evening. When he gets out the shower, he dabs on a bit of the cologne that Gwen gave him as a parting gift, the one he tends never to use because it makes him too nostalgic. But tonight, the sharp citrus fragrance only makes him think of the night ahead, and he feels a slight flutter in his stomach. The excitement isn't just down to Arthur. It's part of it. Arthur's very attractive, and Merlin is definitely looking forward to getting to know him. But it's more about what a date represents. Merlin's 25 years old, and he's never been on a date in his life. He's had dalliances with people, short flings on his travels, most of them only lasting the 1 or 2 nights he stayed in a particular town or city. His encounters have often been intense, charged by the knowledge that he'd be gone again tomorrow, and the risk that he was taking by letting anyone get close to him. There's been no opportunity to just take his time with someone, get to know them slowly. Up until recently, he had discounted the possibility that he could ever be in a relationship with anybody. The cost seemed too great, the risk of the truth about his chip being discovered, about his powers. It's only been in the last year at the Institute, where he's finally felt stable enough to explore his magic and banish some of the demons he's been carrying around, that the possibility of love could even be considered. And Merlin found that he wanted it. More than that, he ached for it. But the residual fears wouldn't go away, and he found himself delaying, making excuses as to why he couldn't put himself out there just yet. The proposed vote changed things. Firstly, in the obvious sense, if the microchips are banned, then he won't live in fear of discovery anymore. But also in an intangible sense, a feeling that attitudes were changing, that after all this time, Britain was becoming the kind of place that might respect his right to live after all. One that might even welcome him. He might be able to live a normal life. Not too normal. He's never been interested in convention, and a house in the suburbs with a white picket fence and 2.4 kids has never appealed to him. He still wants to travel, to go off the beaten track, to experiment with his magic in ways that push against what's been done before. But a little normal. Normal enough to breathe freely when he walks down a crowded street. Normal enough to trust the friends he makes and people he meets. Normal enough to find happiness in his own peace of mind. Normal enough to go on a date with a good-looking guy and have nothing more to worry about than whether he'll get food stuck in his teeth. Suddenly, slightly giddy, he sticks his tongue out at himself in the mirror. He would pretend to be that person tonight, pretend to have no cares in the world, and maybe someday soon it might actually come true. He pads into his bedroom and rifles through his wardrobe, trying to decide what to wear. He'd bought some new jeans a few months ago, but had yet to wear them much. They were slightly tighter than what he usually went for. Freya had dragged him out shopping and insisted he buy them, claiming they would be perfect for when he went out on the pole. She knew full well he never did that, but perhaps she could see the future better than he could. They did look perfect for tonight. He puts them on the bed and then picks out a blue button-down shirt with the sleeves rolled up. It seems about the right mix between smart and casual, and he likes the way it shows off his tattoos. He's almost sure Arthur was gawping at the ones on his hands the other day. He doesn't want to admit to himself that he's making more of a fuss than he ever normally would about an outfit until he opens his underwear drawer. The fact that he pauses before drawing out a pair of navy boxer briefs is a sign he can't ignore. He's wondering if Arthur's going to see him undressed tonight. Even the thought of it sends a little tingle through him, and he's immediately embarrassed.
He's not a blushing schoolboy, and Arthur won't be the first person to ever see him naked should it come to that tonight. And yet, he wants to live like other 20-somethings do, to be casual about sex, to go out drinking and dancing, take people home when and if he feels like it. He's never allowed himself to live in the moment before. Merlin decides that if Arthur wants to take him home tonight, he will let him. He puts on the nice underwear and the tight jeans and the pressed shirt and leaves the house. Arthur's already there when Merlin arrives, and he stands up so formal that Merlin wonders if he's going to pull his chair out for him. He's just as good-looking as Merlin remembers, dressed in a black shirt with his hair artfully mussed. They exchange a slightly awkward hello, and for a moment, Merlin wonders if they'll actually have anything to say to each other. But then he shrugs his jacket off to rest it on the chair behind him, and Arthur suddenly exhales.
What?
Nothing. I like tattoos.
He's not just saying it to be polite. Merlin can see he genuinely means it. His eyes are fixed on the leaves that wind their way up Merlin's forearms, like he's fascinated by them. Merlin's flattered. He always takes it as a compliment to Elena's workmanship, and makes a mental note to email her and tell her she helped him impress some guy on a date. Arthur meets his eyes and smiles, and Merlin realizes that he wants to impress Arthur very much. Luckily, the tattoos help him break the ice. He tells the edited story of how he got them, and then explains the Merlin birds as well, and Arthur listens with genuine interest. The talk moves seamlessly onto other things. Horror films, 80s fashion, the difficulty of eating with chopsticks. Merlin's careful never to mention work or touch upon anything politics or magically related, but Arthur seems happy to let him steer the conversation. He doesn't ask Merlin any prying questions about himself, which Merlin appreciates more than he can say. He doesn't even talk about his own job beyond mentioning he works for a delivery service, and Merlin doesn't ask too many personal questions, in case Arthur feels he has to return the favor. They mainly stick to light topics, and it ends up being more fun than Merlin's had in a long time. Arthur's a good laugh. A lot of his jokes are sarcasm-based, but he has a nice line and self-deprecating humor, too. He's clearly pretty sharp, although he refers to himself as stupid a couple of times, which Merlin assumes is just a light joke at his own expense. Arthur must know he has a lot going for him, but he doesn't seem to show it. Merlin's known men as stereotypically handsome as Arthur before, and they sometimes come with an unpleasant layer of self-regard. But Arthur seems weirdly humble. Unless he's just putting it on to make Merlin warm to him. Which is fair enough, it's not like Merlin's being completely honest on his end either. He hopes Arthur isn't, though. He likes the man in front of him, likes what he's been shown so far. He hopes it's the truth. At one point, Arthur reaches out to touch his hand, just to emphasize some point, and he gives the bird tattoo a brief stroke. Merlin feels a little jolt fly through him when Arthur's skin meets his.
So, do you have any more? Like, anywhere else on your body?
Arthur's tone is suggestive, and Merlin finds himself unconsciously lowering his voice when he replies.
Maybe. And when do I get to see them?
Merlin smiles sweetly. When I say so.
Oh, it's like that, is it?
Arthur's eyes are sparkling.
I have to earn it.
Exactly, Merlin says, taking a nonchalant sip of his wine.
So, how am I doing so far?
Not bad, Merlin says. Good conversation, good choice of restaurant, good shirt.
Arthur laughs. You like my shirt?
It's pretty good. I like mine better, Merlin says shamelessly, and Arthur laughs again. Now that Merlin thinks about it, he might be slightly tipsy. He doesn't tend to get drunk much, too afraid of what secrets might pop out, but he's had 3 glasses of wine, and apparently that's all it takes these days. He excuses himself to go to the bathroom and splashes a bit of cold water on his face in an attempt to sober up. He's been doing well so far. He doesn't need to get a case of loose lip syndrome now. When he comes back, Arthur's picked up the bill.
It's not a negotiation, Merlin. The person who invites is the one who pays,
Arthur says, waving away Merlin's attempts to offer up his entire wallet.
Yeah, but I can just...
Merlin, Arthur says, you can pay for the next date, okay?
Merlin opens his mouth to protest further, and then it dawns on him. Next date?
Yeah, if you want.
Merlin licks his lips slightly.
Yeah, I do.
He feels that same giddy rush he felt standing in front of the mirror at home, like something new is starting, and it's scary, but it's exciting too. Then they're in the street, and Merlin's figuring out his best way home, and whether he should lean in and kiss Arthur before they part, when Arthur says,
Can I give you a lift home?